Pennsylvania. Sorry if there was an abrupt change there. I'm Will Clemens. I'm your host of Hot Take Sports. It goes on air every Monday, 4 p.m. Once again, took a little bit longer than expected to get on the air. And I'm going to be working through a lot of kinks today because, for the first time on the air, I didn't take any notes for what I'm going to talk about. This is all improv. I'm going to check scores and just speak what's on my mind, figure it out as I go through. I mean, I feel like this week of football, we have a lot of things. Pretty much nothing was consistent. We can talk college football and how impossible it is to rank these teams and what an egregious job the committee does. But is their job egregious or is it simply just very difficult, especially this year? Should we expand? College basketball starts tomorrow. It's November 8th, Monday, November 8th, 2021. College basketball starts tomorrow. That's exciting for everybody. So we got a lot to talk about. I say we just jump right in. And as you know, we always start with my Jets, who disappointed once again. I said I wasn't going to get my expectations up last week. And good thing I didn't because, of course, even though Mike White had an impressive drive down the field to match what they gave up to the Colts. First of all, you have to address this first. The defense was just so simply abysmal and frustrating to watch. It was just killer and mind-blowing. The Colts had 200 yards rushing before the first contact was made with their backs. That just cannot happen. You can't be a team in the National Football League and have that happen. They didn't. I understand it was a short week, but it was a short week for the Colts too, who came off a super emotional loss. They pretty much realized that they handed over the division to Tennessee with that loss. And the Jets, you're coming off a big win. You're on a high. And Robert Saleh is always going through how it's going to be a roller coaster of emotions, how there's going to be high points and low points. You got to step it up on defense there. Not to mention Marcus May is now out for the year, which is frustrating because he's in the last year of his contract. He hasn't played that well this season, and we know that he has some trade value. And the day after the trade deadline happens, he gets hurt for the season. So even just say we don't sign him next year, we could have traded him and gotten at least, even if it was a fifth-round pick for him, we would have gotten some value. I mean, I don't want to see him go. He's been a great leader of the team. That's upsetting. So basically, let me set the scene. The Jets, I believe they won the toss. They get the ball first, and upon their first drive, they look like muck, and I'm disappointed. They, I believe, go 3-and-out and then punt it away, where Nyheim Hines takes a 40-yard touchdown run nearly untouched, and I'm staring down at my computer in the library, and I am just frustrated. But then Mike White, as he does so often, or not so often, leads in hell of a drive down the field, starts dishing it, dacking it, dunking it. You can see that he hits rookie Elijah Moore a number of times. All the receivers step up, and so he hits rookie Elijah Moore in the end zone for a touchdown. He's doing these finger pointings. I'm in the library with some of my buddies. I'm going crazy. Go Jets, go Jets. Whatever. Anyways. Excuse me, sorry. Just silencing my phone here. Mike White steps up to the plate. Then, just simply because Jets fans cannot have nice things, he gets hurt. Of course, it's a little numb radiating down his forearm, sharp pain. And he's out. And of course, what does that mean? Of course, Josh Johnson's going to come in. My expectations go down. I nearly am about to turn the game off. I'm texting with my uncle. He is just as in disbelief as I am. And Josh Johnson comes in and balls. But the only thing is, their defense was so abysmal. Ulbrich needs to figure something out. They've surrendered 54, 31, and 45 points in three straight weeks. That's just unacceptable. I don't know what happened. It's not like they were playing great at the beginning of the season. But remember, they held the Panthers to 19 points. It's not like the Panthers' offense is anything special. The Titans, who have a crazy explosive offense, with Derrick Henry, they held them to 24 points in overtime. The Broncos, their defense hasn't been anything to speak of all season, but these past 3 weeks have been just ridiculous. So the Jets play the Bills this upcoming weekend with a huge dilemma as Zach Wilson comes back to practicing. There should be some discussion, but I'm hesitant. The fact that Mike White went out last week, he had his opportunity in front of him. He couldn't capitalize, whether it's his fault or a fault of his own or not, regardless. I say you have to get the kid in. Just continue developing him. With Mike LaFleur up in the booth, the play calling on offense has improved drastically. As you can tell, that for the first, 5 weeks of the season, they were legitimately just sticking to the mindset theory, run on the first two downs, and then pass on third down. It made their offense incredibly predictable. Wilson really didn't have any shot. And it's funny because almost when they threw in the backup, it's almost like LaFleur like opened up the playbook and started incorporating so many different schemes, plays, interesting, just a plethora of different ideas, gimmicks. There was more trick plays in the last 2 weeks I've seen on the Jets offense than in many years. Most of them were successful. So I understand it's against the Bills, but the Bills are coming off a crazy crushing loss, which we'll get into later, which means that they're going to be fired up and they're going to want to prove themselves. You have to put Zach in and you have to get him his reps if he's healthy. If he's not healthy, don't force him out there. It's simple as that. So Jets play next Saturday at 1:00. I might be in attendance of the game. It's kind of frustrating sometimes, like, you know, with school and work and all these other things that I got on my plate. I wish I could do more shows so I could talk about things more quickly when they happen and not just right after. Like, this Jets game has probably already been talked about at length from many different sportscasters. And so it's just interesting and frustrating a little. I wish I could have talked about it on Friday. I just simply can't do that. So let's get back into the weekend rundown. Some awesome games. Some games that had great relevance because there was huge storylines leading up into them in the week prior. I mean, this battle for Ohio, the Browns versus the Bengals, was a game that nobody expected to be a blowout. Everybody kind of thought it was going to be a dirty, gritty, equally matched teams going forward. I thought the Bengals were going to win, admittedly. And wow, so there was a crazy storyline all week before about Odell Beckham Jr. and his role on the Browns. He didn't request a trade, but his dad posted an Instagram video that's 11 minutes long. And to be completely fair, if you watch all 11 minutes, he is open very often, for those of you that understand the context. Odell Beckham Jr.'s dad posted an Instagram video of him getting open and Baker Mayfield not hitting him. And for the most part in this situation, it's not like Baker's hitting other targets. Baker's just kind of running around and thinking he can do too much. But like, one of the big main topics of conversation that's been going on, just especially today in the multiple sports talk shows, I haven't been too active listening to it. It's something that I actually enjoy about this show, is that it takes away from me listening to other people's takes and I'm realizing that I have to form my own opinions on these topics. So I try to keep to myself, especially on Mondays, stay away from listening to sports talk and focus on what I'm going to talk about in the show. But anyways, Baker played awesome. He, without Odell for the first time since Odell was released on Thursday after the trade deadline, they couldn't find a trade partner. It's a large contract to absorb for Odell, who's definitely a little bit older and a little bit less explosive. But the Instagram video proved he still can get open. As well as that Instagram video was LeBron tweeting out free OBJ. I think Justin Jefferson and other members of the Vikings were wearing free Odell shirts in their warmups. Odell is just a loud person. There's always those people that just, with them comes a lot of noise. It's kind of interesting how Cam Newton talked about why he was released from the Patriots. Not because he wasn't willing to serve the backup role, but it's because Cam Newton is loud. He's one of those people, he draws attention to himself. Odell is really loud, and whether it be by virtue of that catch, that one catch that he made that turned him into a star, or all the other social media things, or being a part of LSU, and all those scandals, or not scandals, but trouble he got into. He's a loud person, he has a loud personality, and he's a star. And to be completely honest, a market like Cleveland isn't the place for a star. So with that being said, Baker went in with his first game without Odell, which is funny because everybody remarks that Odell and Baker are like really good friends. And I believe that because the way that Baker handled his post-game press was like totally awesome. He said he wished him well, in fact, that they were still friends and that they keep in touch. But he's only focused on the people in his locker room. So Baker, 14 for 21 for 218 yards and 2 touchdowns. Let me be clear. The Browns got healthy again. Nick Chubb was balling. He had 137 yards and 2 touchdowns as well. Donovan Peoples-Jones and Jarvis Landry are a great tandem receiver. And you can tell that when Baker's only throwing the ball 21 times, it's a recipe for success for the Browns. That's all they need to do. They need to know their role. Baker needs to know his role. Hand the ball off. Initiate the run game. And when you initiate the run game like you do, and get that downhill power running going, it opens up the play-action opportunities as the linebackers and the DBs creep up towards the line of scrimmage to stop the big plays on the ground. So Baker showed a lot of self-awareness in this game, something that he's getting better at. Like, he's had multiple seasons where he was very good at it, and then sometimes you compare it to games such as last week, and he just didn't understand. The self-awareness and jump, whether it be by virtue of the loss of Odell or not, is super interesting, honestly. We'll see where they go from here. They play the Patriots next week, which will be a very interesting game of pretty much contemporaries in Mac Jones, who's on a, seems to be like meteoric rise right now. He's just playing as if he is Tom Brady, and these Patriots are getting really good again, which terrifies me as a Jets fan. So these two contemporaries are going to square off at 1 o'clock. That's a super interesting game. Both teams are at 5-4, and they both could use a win to work their way back up in their divisions. Not that both are up for grabs, but they're both in the range, followed by a game at the Lions and the Ravens. So that's showdown versus the Ravens in 3 weeks is going to be on Sunday Night Football the weekend following Thanksgiving, and that is going to be a monstrous game. Not only for Baker, not only for Lamar, for the division. So currently, the Ravens lead the division by like a good margin. They're 6-2 compared to Pittsburgh, who plays tonight at 4-3, and Cleveland and Cincinnati at 5-4. I mean, something else we got to touch on is just the collapse of the Bengals. This team that was considered to be the hottest team in football at 5-2, leading their division, leading the AFC, has taken two ugly losses recently. Joe Burrow, for the first time in a while, did not look good yesterday. On the first drive, I mean, it really sets the tone for the whole game. They drive all the way down the field. And given, I wish I could watch more of these games, but I was out of town this weekend, and so I was listening to it on Red Zone in my car on the radio. And I'm listening to their first drive on Red Zone. They take it all the way in. Jamar Chase has some catches. Joe Mixon's running well. They have a great tight end. And then Joe Burrow throws a 99-yard pick six right at the goal line to Denzel Ward. And that just set the tone for the whole game. The Bengals couldn't get right after that. In terms of like a morale standpoint, they went from thinking they were going to be up 7-0 in the first quarter, from being down 7-0 before their defense ever even stepped on the field. It's got to just be demoralizing for a team. I never have played, but I can only imagine. And Burrow's day didn't really improve. They had 3 turnovers, the Bengals did, which just leads to the Browns controlling the ball more, and the Browns with their awesome O-line and their power running game can just take control of the game and run the ball and run the clock and own it. Like, there's no way you can lose when you win the turnover battle by plus three margin and you have that running game and that O-line. Browns are legit. They're going to get back to their stride here after some rough weeks these past two. We'll see where they go from there. The next game we can get into, I don't want to even touch upon this one too much because it really just seems like a fluke game from the Cowboys. Dak Prescott did not participate fully in this week's of practice. He only was a full participant starting Thursday, and he just didn't look right the whole game. He had like 70 yards after the first three quarters. And the Broncos came out to play. They wanted to prove that they still have something of value with this season, even though they just traded away one of their franchise's best ever players. Von Miller goes, and they still feel like they have a lot to prove. So, kudos to the Broncos for coming out to play. For Dallas, I don't think you think anything of this game. Every good team has some dud games every once in a while. You just got to throw it away and reset. I believe the Cowboys have a divisional game next week. No, excuse me. They play in the 1 o'clock window against the Falcons. They should be big favorites. The spread there, wow, once again, 9-point favorites. That's a big number. And they are at home. So they're at home against the Falcons again. They should take this one easily. I would take Dallas minus 9. They're going to bounce back. Atlanta's coming off a huge emotional win. They're going to come out flat. And Dallas, minus 9. Take the points. Take Dallas. I mean, I don't bet, but if you want to trust me with your betting advice, bet Dallas spread here. As for the Broncos, I mean, the Broncos, we keep on thinking that they're dead in the water, and they keep on telling us that they're dead in the water. And then they pull off these past 2 weeks of wins, and they're tied for first place in the division. Speaking of which, that division is crazy because every team in it is not tied, but depending on whether they had the bye or not, they all have 5 wins. Every team in the division has 5 wins. Chargers technically sit atop at 5-3, followed by the Raiders also at 5-3. Followed by the Chiefs at 5-4 and Denver at 5-4. That's, I don't know what direction that division is going to go. I don't think Denver is going to win. I think it's in between the Chargers and the Chiefs to win the division, but that doesn't mean that the Raiders can't get a wild card berth, or three of those teams can get a wild card berth, or two. I don't know. Will they cannibalize upon themselves and some of their inner division games will take from one another rather than boasting some up? Of course. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Broncos play the Eagles next week. Excuse me. Broncos play the Eagles next week. It'll be interesting to see what goes on there. Eagles really fought hard yesterday, and Jalen Hurts is playing well, and he's playing his butt off. The game is at Mile High, so I guess I would take Denver in this game. They're 2.5-point favorites. The Eagles have some pieces, though. I mean, Devontae Smith is playing really well. Don't sleep on the Broncos. They're coming ready to play. They want to prove that they still have something to make of this season. Man, it's just crazy to think that the Broncos have 5 wins. Texans at Dolphins is kind of a throwaway game. These two teams will be at the bottom of the standings for the rest of the year. Not to mention Tua didn't even play, which is so upsetting because Tua was just getting traction in his career. And he had to prove all these crazy people wrong at the deadline. Like their crazy general manager who said, oh, even though we were taking looks at Deshaun Watson, Tua's our guy and we have absolute faith in him. Like, we just have to take a look at every option on the market as if the Buccaneers are taking looks at the market when they have Tom Brady. Come on. Come on, guys. It's just, like, you can only try to virtue signal so much. Tua's not an idiot. And it just all depends on whether he's going to let him get under his skin or not, which we couldn't even see let play out. He was out with a middle finger injury. The Texans are bad. Tyrod actually was back in the lineup for the first time, I believe, since week two. And he played not well. And then Jacoby Brissett was in the lineup for the Dolphins, and he didn't play well. And in the battle of the bad teams, Miami came away with it. Not much to take away from that game. The Falcons came into the Superdome as pretty big underdogs. I believe they were 7, 6.5 point underdogs. And man, Matt Ryan wants to make a case that he's still a starting quarterback in this league so badly. I think he moved into 10th all time on passing yards this weekend, which I didn't even realize that Matt Ryan was anywhere close to that. Very impressive by him. Cordarrelle Patterson is about the best Swiss Army knife in the league. The Falcons are now 500 somehow, and the Saints, this must be crushing for them at home. They have a chance to win the game and take the division. Excuse me, not take the division. Take first place in the division above the Bucs, because remember, they beat them last week. And they didn't put up a dud, but it's really hard because Trevor Siemian is just not as dynamic as Jameis. They were doing this weird kind of switching reps in between Siemian and Taysom Hill, who's back from concussion protocol. I mean, Taysom Hill didn't throw too many passes, but he played well. The two of them combined for 267 yards passing and two touchdowns, mostly Siemian passing. And so the Falcons, their defense is a lot better this year than they have been in years past. Not for any reason. Kyle Pitts is, I mean, I don't really follow fantasy all too much. I technically play fantasy as a part of the school. I have Kyle Pitts on my team. And man, he is frustrating as a player. Some days he will have a great Sunday and put up a lot of points. Other Sundays, as in this one, he had some yards. He played well. But first play of the game, he's a wide open deep shot that he just simply drops. So, I mean, he had three receptions for 62 yards, but that's on 7 targets. I don't know whether that was the right pick there. Well, I guess we'll see how it pans out. But the funny part is all the scouts are talking about just how ridiculous a talent this guy is and how he's just a freak athlete, freak specimen. And I just haven't seen that been proven on the field yet. Something I drove right by on my drive home. I was up in Boston this weekend visiting friends. Something that I drove right by as I drove by MetLife was the Giants versus the Raiders game. Interesting game. Vegas had a chance to take they were already in sole first place in the division. And a win, obviously, would have locked them up, and that would have been huge. They're coming off an incredibly emotional week, off-the-field things that I honestly don't even want to address that much. Gonna try to keep this show light. But Derek Carr is a leader, and he knows how to rally his team. But this week, going on the road to New York, who's going to be chippy, and they have a good defense. This was bound for disaster for the Raiders. They just could never get it together, really. Derek Carr played well, and I think he should be in conversation for the MVP race. But they just never could get anything going. I understand. This was, with the Raiders, all their offseason issues that they've had this year and dilemmas, the fact that they're having such a great, successful season is an anomaly in itself. And so the Giants deserve the win. Daniel Jones played Daniel Jones-ish. He had 110 yards and a touchdown, 15 catches. There's no explosion on that offense in New York, which is really frustrating because they have great talent on the outside. They have great receivers. I mean, once Saquon comes back, they'll have a great back. I mean, if he ever comes back, he's constantly hurt. But it all stems from the quarterback. I've been on record saying that I do not think Daniel Jones is the answer. I think that they have to go out and address the quarterback position this year. Because, I mean, on the outside, they have Darius Slayton, Kenny Galladay, and Evan Engram, Kyle Rudolph. They have to be better on offense with all that talent on the outside. And I understand that a lot of that can come from the O-line, but I just don't think Daniel Jones is very dynamic. So kudos to the Giants getting a win. No real purpose in it. Whew, this game I really have been wanting to get into for a while. I like addressing the Panthers this year because they have all the Jets old players that Joe Douglas decided not to re-sign or trade away. But it does make me sad because, I mean, they were great players and loyal servants on the Jets. So, Sam Darnold. Any game that Sam Darnold plays against the Patriots, he should just sit. They should just play the backup. He is so bad against the Patriots. It's actually astonishing. He has 11 interceptions. I believe it was 2 years ago on the Jets. This was a really sad day for me, sad night. They were playing on Monday Night Football, and Sam Darnold threw 4 interceptions, and he got quoted for that infamous soundbite that he's seeing ghosts. Not much changed today, 2 years later, on a whole different team, when the Patriots came to town, and Sam Darnold threw 3 interceptions, and he might have single-handedly yesterday in that game thrown away his NFL career, which pains me to say because Sam Darnold is an awesome person. He's only 24 years old, if you can believe that. But he threw 3 interceptions. Some of them were just so ugly. There at the end, I mean, all of them were ugly. One of them, he's rolling out to his right, to his left, and he's as a righty quarterback. He has an open tight end. All he has to do is float it over one guy that's pressuring him and drop it in to his receiver, who's about 10 yards away from him. And then there's a DB coming to meet that player about 15 yards out. And Darnold wings it to him. And when I was watching the highlights, I thought, oh, that's a nice play. He's going to just drop it over the top, little bloop pass to his receiver, first down. And he just overthrows it. It's inexplicable. He throws it over the receiver's head, right to J.C. Jackson, the cornerback, and he just walks into the end zone. Walks in. And then on the next one, he has time in the pocket. He steps up and he throws it right in the defensive lineman's hands. He picks it off. Almost resembles like a J.J. Watt kind of interception. Throws up both of his hands and grabs it and smushes it down. And then this last one, when they're trying to finally make some sort of comeback or push, really could have absolutely buried his career. He's D.J. Moore. I think it was third down. In the back of the end zone. He's not open. He's covered. And the only place that you can put it if you're Sam Darnold is way back where there's no chance that the DB could ever even make a play on it, rather have it go out of bounds than have him pick it off. And he just throws it so underthrown right at the defender for his third interception of the day. Effectively could be burying his NFL career. People all over Carolina and just on Twitter in general are calling for his job to be taken. It's sad. He's a great kid. But he has been awful in the past couple of weeks. Mac Jones keeps on finding himself. He was 12 for 18 for 139 yards, a touchdown, and a pick. He's a lot like Baker almost, where if you give him the right game plan, he's going to win you games. The only thing is, I think that Mac Jones has less of an ego, and he's more willing to take that game plan that Belichick's giving him than Baker is with Stefanski. And that's frustrating, but Mac Jones has great self-awareness. He had it at Alabama, too. He knew to hand it off to his amazing backs and hit his receivers open and in stride, and he was going to be a hit. There was no way he could fail. And in the situation he is with him, in New England with Belichick, he is one of the all-time greatest coach in football, one of the best O-lines in the league. He could use some more receivers on the outside that are more explosive over the top, but he also has 2 great tight ends that are like almost underused, to be completely honest. And he's gonna be successful if he continues to run this game plan. It's like Baker. The two of them, it'll be really interesting to see next week. I'm not excited. I always root against the Patriots, completely honest. But I kind of do want to see how Mac Jones progresses. So as we come to the end of this early window, we got Bills-Jags, which was supposed to be the biggest blowout of the year. Surprisingly, Jacksonville won. Jacksonville, who's supposed to be a losing team, won the game 9-6. And Trevor Lawrence was all right. He got rolled up on in the third quarter, I believe, taken out of the game, came back, showed his toughness. 15 for 26 and 116 yards. They could definitely start opening the playbook to him now, but this was a defensive battle. Everybody everywhere is talking about how Josh Allen's better than Josh Allen because Josh Allen just had such a superior performance to Josh Allen. It wasn't even funny. What this is in context to is how Josh Allen, the quarterback, was constantly up against Josh Allen, the defensive end on Jacksonville. And Josh Allen, the defensive end on Jacksonville, got the best of a MVP favorite, Josh Allen. He had an interception on him, a sack on him, a fumble recovery on him. He also had 8 tackles and a tackle, I think 1 or 2 tackles for loss. So kudos to Josh Allen for being the better Josh Allen, asserting his dominance, getting the name rights. What do I think about the Bills in this situation? I think you burn the tape on this one. This isn't very big of a... This won't be that big of a deal for them in the long run. They're going to get right. I mean, they have the Jets next week. I expect them to win by a million. Sadly. But kudos to Jacksonville for getting a win. With all that stuff that went off the field with Urban Meyer, it was good to see him smiling on the sidelines. Their defense came to play. And it's every week you have to be ready to play. Rounding out the early window, I'll try to address this one quickly. This was the most fun game to listen to on Red Zone in my car. Lamar came back down from 14 down 2 different times, and the Ravens came back in overtime to beat the Vikings. Lamar, if he didn't throw so many interceptions, would easily right now be the MVP favorite. But he was awesome yesterday, 266 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 picks, but he also had 21 carries for 120 yards rushing. The Vikings almost looked like they just didn't know what to do with him. It's just like funny. The Vikings have yet to play the Ravens since Lamar has been there. And it's kind of funny when you see these new teams play Lamar and the film. Although he obviously looks fast on film, it just doesn't equate at a certain point. So the I believe Baltimore took a 7-point lead, and Kirk Cousins, of course, led them down on a huge game-tying drive. Throws a game-tying touchdown pass to corner of the end zone to Thielen. Jump ball. And ties it up at 31. Sends it to overtime. In overtime, Lamar and the guys start running. They look like they're going to go right down the field. And Anthony Barr for the Vikings has an incredible interception where he comes up, jumps it. So this is Kirk Cousins' time. You know, there's all these people that complain about Kirk Cousins is just meh. And so if he wants to prove he's not meh, you go out and you win this game against a team that you were heavy underdogs against. You're 7-point underdogs against in overtime. Not only would you have led a game-tying drive at the last minute of the fourth quarter, but you'd lead a game-winning drive into overtime. All you need, considering he started out at the Baltimore 40, is about 30 yards of offense, and you're in field goal range where your kicker can step up and knock a shot for the win. And yet, he didn't. They went 3 and out. Lamar, of course, gets the ball back, and he's going to make you pay for his mistakes. Comes down, Justin Tucker knocks in the game-winning field goal. Ravens get a crucial win to stay atop the AFC North. 6-2 they go. And kudos to the Ravens. Huge win. We'll see where that division goes from here. Chargers and Eagles was a game that nobody watched except for me because I am, of course, at Lafayette. So we are in the Philly area. Yeah, we got this one on CBS in the common room, and I was actually enjoying watching it. Well, everybody else's eyes were on Jordan Love versus Patrick Mahomes. This was the far superior game. So Justin Herbert looks like he's back to his old giddy self. 32 for 38, 356 yards, two touchdowns, and a rushing touchdown. I really like how they just let him have the reins back of the offense regardless of his poor plays in the past couple weeks. He played amazing, as you can tell by the stat line. Led a game-winning drive as the Chargers don't act like the normal Chargers. They actually hit the game-winning field goal. So it's no longer the Chargers are going to charter. They get the crucial win to tie up with the AFC West standings at those 5-win teams. Compared to the Eagles, they dropped to 3-6. Jalen Hurts was awesome, productive. Devontae Smith is a dog. He is fast as hell. Ooh. Excuse me. The Eagles season's not going to go anywhere. They're going to have a ton of draft capital. We'll see where they can go from there. But the Chargers, hopefully they can get on track and start winning some games from here on out. They play next week versus the Vikings. They should win that one. Then versus the Steelers and the Broncos. So there's a chance they can win their next three games if they're on their game. But the thing is with the Chargers is sometimes they just fail to show up. We saw that against the Ravens, and we saw it last week against the Pats. We'll see what we get from them. I was totally in on Brandon Staley, and then I saw the past 2 weeks of play, and I got a little hesitant, but I have confidence in them. If they win two out of these next three games, they're in a great spot. They should make the playoffs. A super interesting game. Storylines broke just before the game started. I had just gotten back on campus when I checked my phone in and said, Kyler Murray is going to be out. I believe he's nursing a calf injury. So that means Colt McCoy got the start against a tough 49ers team. And he played awesome. He was 22 for 26 for 249 yards and a touchdown. I mean, Colt McCoy has led some big wins the past two seasons. Remember last year with the Giants in Seattle, he went out and beat the Seahawks. And the Giants were terrible last year, and the Seahawks were awesome last year. So this week, he had to come in and huge shoes to fill. They were also missing DeAndre Hopkins. So a backup quarterback missing his leading receiver, and I believe leading rusher as well. I don't think Chase Edmonds was in the game. Came into Levi Stadium in San Francisco and absolutely obliterated. I believe it was 31-0 at one point. It was 31-7 halfway through the third quarter, and that just put the game on ice, really. They came in and they physically dominated them. The week after getting shelled by the Packers and physically dominated, they felt like they had something to prove. Kyler Murray's going to come back into this offense, and so is DeAndre Hopkins, and they're going to be healthy. Think about it now. Kyler Murray's going to come off more than 2.5 weeks of rest when they play next week. And they got an easier game next week against the Panthers, who are trying to figure themselves out. Whether we'll see Sam Darnold out there or not is going to be interesting. Matt Rhule had some comments about that after the game. So, should be a win for them next week before they have a huge divisional matchup against the Seahawks the following week. If they can win those next two, they have this division on lock. Because they have the one win over the Rams, assuming they can beat the Rams the second time, which they play on Monday Night Football in early to mid-December, we'll see how everything plays out with them. But huge win for the Cardinals. They felt like they had something to prove, and they came out and proved it for themselves. Packers and Chiefs was the game that everybody was really wondering about, so we'll get into that last. First, we'll address the Titans versus the Rams, which was a interesting, weird, super confusing game. Titans D showed up to the game, picked off Stafford twice within their own 20. Stafford just had an ugly game. Tried to make something happen there at the end. It was too late. Adrian Peterson, in his 15th year, scored a touchdown for the Titans as they try to find replacements for the Derrick Henry injury. That dude still got some gas left in the tank, which is so insane to say. because when I first started watching football, I was probably 6 years old, as I'm now 19 years old. Yeah, so 6 years old was probably when I started, and he was still the best player in the league. He was just on his meteoric rise to the best player in the league at that time, and he immediately became one of my favorite players to watch. I used to spend every Monday morning watching SportsCenter, and he was the first name that would come across the bottom line when it read the fantasy scores week to week to week to week. It was not even a question. So to see him now in 2021, as I'm a college student and he's still continuing to put up numbers and still in this league, and all the off the field stuff that happened with him, the fact that he's still here, I was very happy to see that. He scored a touchdown, 125th career touchdown. I was really happy for him. We'll see where the Titans can go from here. They have their division on lock. They just have some interesting games going forward. They play the Saints next week. The Texans, they'll win easily, followed by the Patriots. So those two games will be easy. Their division is going to come to help them at this point, considering they already beat the Colts twice. They only are going to play the Jaguars and the Texans in division. So you can write off those as wins. So they could easily run away with the one seed in the AFC. That's what they are right now. And Derrick Henry will come back. He's a peak performing athlete. He'll be back at some point soon. Starting to run out of time here. Wow. The game that everybody is wondering about is, how is Jordan Love going to play against the struggling Chiefs? Let me tell you, the Chiefs didn't stop struggling. Their offense was ugly. The first drive of the game, they were all on script, which happens often, almost Jets Adam Gase type-like. He marches down the field, Patrick Mahomes does, and throws a touchdown to Kelsey. And then it was nothing on offense for the rest of the game. Lucky for them, Jordan Love was atrocious. Yay. Jordan Love was awful. He couldn't get anything going whatsoever. I saw one throw where there was a flash of arm talent where he was rolling out to his right, hit Randall Cobb out pretty deep. That was it. That was the only impressive moment I saw from Jordan Love. I know he's a baby and it's his first career start and he's got to like get his feet wet first. Rough game to get your feet wet against. Kansas City brought the house on him all day, and it really did mess up his progressions and stuff. But you also have two power running backs and a great O-line, so I don't understand why LaFleur's game plan wasn't totally focused on that. He only had Aaron Jones have 12 carries. Jordan Love came back down, scored a touchdown at the end to make it slightly interesting, and Patrick Mahomes put the game on ice, and what every single sports talk guy is saying that could be the play that gets Mahomes' jitters out that he's had the past couple weeks, where he rolls out to his right and finds Tyreek Hill in what used to look like the Chiefs' offense on a day-to-day basis. It hasn't looked like that much this year, so kudos to him. He seemed very passionate and pumped up about his completion. Good to see him back to normal. This is a fluke game. If Aaron Rodgers was playing, they would have won by multiple touchdowns, in my opinion, if Aaron Rodgers was playing in that game. They would have opened up the entire playbook. He would have understood and saw all the blitzes coming. The Chiefs would have had to play that better. I mean, the Chiefs' defense has been the worst in league history. So it's very telling that Jordan Love comes in for his first career start and he only scores 7 points. And I mean, so much focus is on Aaron Rodgers this week. I mean, I'll address it briefly, but I don't want to talk about it that much. In my opinion, Aaron Rodgers should just eat it at this point. You got to do it. You got to do what's best for your team. If you're going to be a team guy, I understand if you're hesitant, blah, 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 blah. Eat the vaccine. Obviously not eat it. It's an expression, but you got to do what's best for your team at a certain point. And if you know that there's a chance that you could be out for a longer amount of time, just say this happened in the playoffs, their season would be over just by virtue of him not getting vaccinated. I agree with the NFL not making mandates imposed, especially with all players in individual situations. But you got to eventually man up and do what's best for your team. You're the leader of the football team. Also, why is he lying about the fact? It's really interesting. And he came out, and as he does each week on Pat McAfee, he just kind of like blitzed the media and everything. But to be completely honest, he has no right to. It's no fault but his own. He also is getting a lot of criticism for not following the protocols, such as wearing a mask and other stuff. I don't know totally what to make of it. The league will come out and address the situation in some sort. Hopefully it gets taken care of. Hopefully Aaron Rodgers doesn't get COVID ever again. Hopefully he's okay, but hopefully he never gets again so that he doesn't miss the playoffs anymore. If not, get the vaccine. I don't think he can get it twice in that very quick of a time. Anyways, I always go too long with the weekend rundown. That's what I got to figure out how to do better in the future. The Bears play the Steelers tonight in a game that doesn't interest me whatsoever, to be completely honest. I want to see if Justin Fields can do anything better. But I hate watching Pittsburgh's offense, and I hate watching Chicago's offense. And that just doesn't make for an interesting game. The Steelers are 7-point favorites. I believe they're at home. Yeah, they're at home. Home primetime in Pittsburgh versus a rookie quarterback. I think it could be a bloodbath. I mean, there's no way it can be a bloodbath because the Steelers' offense isn't good enough to bury them. But it could get ugly in terms of just Justin Fields could have a rough day. I expect him to not do anything well. So I'd take the Steelers 7 points here. And once again, I'm sorry. I always run this segment far too long. It almost takes up my full hour. But it looks like I gotta hit the road here. So you've been listening to WJRH 104.9 FM, Lafayette College Radio, Easton, Pennsylvania. This has been Hot Take Sports Episode 3. I got a lot to work on as a host and as a broadcaster. But I'm enjoying the experience. I'm learning a lot. Nobody's helping me with the whole process either. So it's kind of self-reflecting, self-learning. And I want to address far more topics next week. So maybe I take some games out of the weekend rundown and I only talk about the big ones. I'm going to prep it a little bit more. So this has been Hot Take Sports. Thank you guys for having me. And I'll see you guys again next week.